Hello and welcome. I'm Gary Shipe. Thanks for listening in as we continue to talk with leaders in our community. Our guests today are Kirby Larson and Shawnee Haslett. Kirby is a local author of children's books, and Shawnee is the owner of All for Kids Books and Music near University Village, and also, Shawnee, former president of the American Booksellers for Children. Is that right?
That's correct.
And we're going to talk this morning about books and children and reading and writing and who knows what else. Kirby, Shawnee, thank you for coming and welcome.
Thanks, Gary, for inviting us.
Well, this week is National Children's Book Week, right? And everyone is encouraged to read children's books, not just to children, but for ourselves, right?
Absolutely.
And from what I recall from first grade, that means I'll be reading See Spot, Run, CJ. Why are we supposed to read old, dry stuff like that?
It's no longer dry.
Oh,
there
good.
Are so many things that are far more interesting and far more readable. Available today.
I'm reminded when you say that, I'm reminded of a quote by C.S. Lewis who said, a children's book that is only enjoyed by children is not a very good children's book. And the books that you're referring to were really useful in helping children emerge as readers. But we've learned a lot about how kids learn, about what keeps them engaged, and you won't find too many of those repetitive, redundant books, at least in the trade market anymore. There are still basal readers in the education field. But in the trade market, which is what I know and what Shawnee has in our stores, you're going to find books that will make you laugh out loud, books that you'll reach for time and time again, and that you'll want to add to your own personal collection.
So there's a big difference then in books, school books, and children's literature, and that's what we're going to talk about, right?
Right.
So Shawnee, your store, let's say that right up front, is a children's bookstore and music store, right?
That's correct.
And it's called, say the name again.
All for Kids Books and Music.
Okay, I did get it right then.
But if parents don't enjoy reading the book, the child's never going to hear it. Consequently, the child will not learn to read because the parent won't enjoy reading to that child if the book is dull. It needs to be something that the parent enjoys reading.
Well, that's eye-opening, I guess. I never stopped to think about it, but that makes perfect sense. Why not? What age do we start reading to our kids? In the womb before? I mean, I remember music. In the music, people say, oh, you should start playing music while they're still in the womb so they'll become artistic or something. And reading, when do kids like to and respond to reading? Or do you know anything like this?
My husband's an accountant, which you wouldn't expect an accountant to be into books for children as much. But he started reading to our son when he was probably only 4 or 5 months old. And more when they're small like that, it's about the relationship between the parent and the child, being held cozy next to mom or dad or grandma and grandpa or whoever. Just the sense of the rhythm of what mom and dad are reading is saying. It's really about the relationship. I'm no expert at child development, but I wouldn't imagine it's until kids are starting to get language of their own that they're really completely understanding what they're hearing. But they understand the love and the connection in that very early stage. I don't think you can start reading too early.
And let me add to what Kirby said. I feel that books have to start the minute the child starts, whether it's in the womb or the minute they're born, because the only way children learn a language is through oral recitation. And if they don't hear the words, they're not going to learn the words. And it's one of the things that our society is losing, and that's vocabulary, because kids need to be challenged with the books that they are read to as well as they are reading themselves.
Well, you know, as I was researching for this interview this week, I found that immigrants who'd come to this country and who are learning English as their new language, a children's book is a wonderful source of learning the language, just as you said, as an infant or a toddler can, isn't it?
What we're finding, especially for ESL readers, is that the story has to be interesting and exciting and continuing education, and the language is the most important thing. Because there are many students who go to school who go home after school and are not speaking the English language. So they, too, help their parents learn English.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say this is a little tangential, but I think oftentimes we feel that children's books have to be educational with underlines and in bold. And I think we fall into a really big, dangerous trap if we are so concerned with educating children. I don't know many people as adults who like getting lectures or having something crammed down their throat. And so I think what Shawnee was getting at is successful children's books have elements of humor or suspense or action or drama, the things that tap in, we all connect with, that we all tap into. And so I think you'll find that the books that are used in ESL or whatever programs are those that are really good stories, really fun stories.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I also found, you said something that made me think that I found that 37% of American fourth graders, you're talking about vocabulary, you know, are reading below what's called the basic, you know, educational or expected level. And is that statistic surprising you? Have you found it? Mm-hmm. You've been selling books for a while. What do you see? Is there trends or not in our educational level of kids and really young kids?
Unfortunately, that statistic does not surprise me. In fact, I would have expected it to be higher because our world has gone more technical, into a more technical field. Kids are not being challenged with reading. And when television is based at a fourth grade level, mm-hmm. that's really where the reading stops if kids get hooked into a screen. Now, the screen is now expanded into any kind of screen, whether it's computer, whether it's their handheld games, whatever mm-hmm. it is. The less we use the language, the less that student is likely to read.
I spoke with a kindergarten teacher not too long ago who was telling me that many of her little kindergartners are coming to school not knowing the nursery rhymes that we would expect everyone would know. And I think that's a sad commentary that we don't have those common grounds. And not that nursery rhymes are the be-all, end-all, but we do need a common literature, common stories to tell.
Speaking of nursery rhymes, when I do parenting classes with some of the community colleges in the area, I always tell them that the most important three R's are not reading, writing, and arithmetic, but rhythm, rhyme, and repetition. Because if you use rhythm, rhyme, and repetition, it causes retention. And
that's a fourth
rhymes,
R.
Well, yes, because we're adding to this wonderful education.
Well, I'm wondering then if each successive generation reads a little less than the previous ones since the electronic age. I mean, I don't recall reading Alice in Wonderland myself or The Wizard of Oz like my mother would have. I mean, I suppose if I want to read these days, I watch CNN and watch the words scroll by at the bottom. I don't seem to read as much. Are we dumbing down children's literature, or is there still a wealth there must be? I mean, let's talk about Harry Potter is enormously popular. Are there other new books that are as exciting for kids that are also big time?
How many hours do we have on the show?
The literature is never being dumbed down. Yeah. It's the choice of the literature and where you can find it.
Okay.
Now, of course, all of this good literature is available at all for kids. But we find that if you are hooked into good books, you continue to search out good literature. And there's a real difference between a book and good literature.
Yeah.
And
how can a parent decide, besides something they like or used to like?
I can tell you one way is you go into a store like Shawnee's, All for Kids. I actually teach in the Whidbey Writers Workshop Master of Fine Arts program and teach adult students about writing for children. And I sent two of my students to Shawnee's store the other day where her wonderful staff helped them understand the difference between bridge books and chapter books, books for emergent readers. So you go to an independent bookstore where the staff not only loves books but really understands which books are appropriate for which age levels. And it gets a little harder because we all know that child who at 8 reads at the Harry Potter or up level, but you might not want – you might want to be careful about the content or the topic of the book. And so good bookstore staffs will be able to direct you to appropriate books for those children.
Are there some genres of books or series of books that, you know, you steer people and parents and kids away from that, you know, this is comic books or those Goosebump series? Oh. You know, some of them are real popular, but sell. Are kids reading, but is he even growing, you know, in mentally as he reads so much stuff or is reading anything good?
What I'd like to talk about is how we could direct people to books and series that they might not be as knowledgeable about. You know, I'm writing for young adults right now, and so, you know, what jumps to mind is everyone knows the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants trilogy now, right? Mm-hmm. But they might not know some other really fine young adult titles as well. I'm thinking of Dairy Queen.
It's not a series yet. Though.
Right,
it's not
a series.
Standalone.
Right, but.
But before we go any further on that, I think it's very important to know that every person who walks in has a different need and a different taste. And you can't just go to a bookshelf with 150 titles on it and automatically mm-hmm. reach your hand out and pull out something that you're going to like. Mm-hmm. So as far as I'm concerned, reading is about relationships. And the more we know about the customer who comes in, what they like, if they're into sports, if they're into fantasy, the more we learn about them, the better our recommendation can be so that they successfully come back waiting and wanting another choice.
This kind of tags into something. I write a children's book review column for a local newspaper, and one of my reasons for doing that is to connect adults with kids' books, because unless you know what a kid likes and you know what books are out there, it will be harder for you as a parent or a caring adult to match a student up or child up with a book that they might love. And when I visit schools, the first thing I always ask kids is if they have any book titles they can recommend to me. And I think that affirms to them that the books they're reading have merit, have value, and then I as an adult am very interested in their opinions about those books. And I hope that that models to them that I think kids' books are important and want their opinion about them.
Terrific. We are talking today with Kirby Larson and Shawnee Haslett. Kirby is an author of a new children's book called Hattie Big Sky, and Shawnee is the owner of the All for Kids Books and Music Store in Seattle. Shawnee, as a kid, I have some fond memories of my mother reading to me Mike Mulligan and his steam shovel, Beverly Cleary books. Are those still popular? Are there books that always sell over the years?
Absolutely. And the two that you named are certainly among the top list.
What I can picture that book, I mean, the cover so clearly now in some of those illustrations.
And that's exactly what we want to have happen between books and kids. The people who are buying kids' books are the parents or the guardians of kids. Sometimes when they're old enough, if they're 8 or 10 or 12, they are doing some of the picking because of peer pressure or because of advertising or whatever. But the majority of books for children are purchased by adults. So we're going back. What I see is a nostalgia reach. We're going back to some of the things that were important to us as children, or as we were raising younger children, and going back to nursery rhymes. I mean, that's the thing that is absolutely astounding to me. There are many, many young parents who didn't learn them because they're just in their 20s and 30s, and that was not an important focus at that time. What has happened in the book industry that is kind of surprising is in the last 10 years, we have what we call fairy tale takeoffs or fractured fairy tales. Mm-hmm. And they are hilarious to those of us who know the real story. A lot of third graders who are reading those, or fourth or fifth graders who are reading those fractured fairy tales, don't really get it.
They don't get the big joke because they don't know the big bad wolf in the first place.
That's right.
Oh, that's too
right.
Bad.
So there's a lot of history to be caught up in the children's book world. And it will be it's important for us as parents to make sure that the proper groundwork is laid so that today's literature is more understood by kids.
Well, I still love to be read too. You know, I almost always have a book on tape in my car. Does that count if I put a children's book on tape in this week? Because my favorite was always Go Dog Go. I don't know if you know. Does that one still sell, by the way? P.D. Eastman. I have a great copy of that at home.
Yes.
Well, let's turn to you a little bit. You've written your stupid cell phone's going off. That's my fault. I'll accept full responsibility. Well, I think I said we'll help some parents, you know, by looking for some quality titles or names of literature. You've written more than one, but I mentioned Hattie Big Sky, but you've written other books. But your first several, now this is your fourth book,
this
fifth
is
book.
Actually my sixth book. Hattie Big Sky is my sixth book. Two were ghost written, and that's always fun to talk to kids about when I go to visit schools. A lot of the series books have one person's name on the front cover, but they're written by many, many different writers. And called Ghostwriters because our names are invisible.
Uh-huh.
And our names are never on there. So two of the books that I have out are ghostwritten. Two are chapter books about the first through third grade reader. And chapter books are one of my favorite passions. I call them the soap operas of children's literature. Because I don't know if you remember back to first, second, or third grade. At first recess, you're best friends with, you know, little Susie. And then at second recess, you're mad at each other because uh-huh. something happened. And I just love that emotional roller coaster. Really a big passion of mine.
And so your first couple books, second grade Pig Pals is mm-hmm. one. Cody and Quinn Sitting in a Tree. Mm-hmm. And those are aimed at those chapter books for 8, 9-ish, 10-year-olds.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah.
And then so now that's not called a youth or a young adult reader at all.
No.
And Hattie Big Sky is aimed for a teenager, I'd say. I read the first chapters online, by the way. People
yes.
should go and look
www.hattiebigsky.com.
Hattiebigsky.com. It's
yeah.
great. So it's up to adult. I mean, it's easy for me to enjoy as a story.
Exactly.
It's not a kid's story.
I just got an email from a friend who was at a bookstore in California and saw copies of it in the young adult section as well as the adult section. And if you go to HattieBigSky.com, you'll see a quote there from a really rough, tough cowboy in Montana who loved the book and was actually irked that it was being marketed to young adults because he felt that adults would enjoy it. But that I one thing I need to say about that book is when I was writing it, I wasn't thinking about what audience I was writing it for.
That was my question.
Yeah.
It was taking me forever to get around. I couldn't get around to it.
I can read your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I just had this conversation with someone else.
How does that start? It's the story that drove it, not that I'm writing another children's book. I have the story in my head
exactly.
to tell. Is that it?
Exactly. What happened was I learned that my great-grandmother had homesteaded by herself in eastern Montana. She was about 24 at the time and had been on her own like Hattie, kind of went from family to family taking care of whoever was sick. And in my mind, probably got awfully sick of that herself and wanted to find a home of her own. Only reason I can figure out why this teeny tiny frail woman would go to eastern Montana to try to prove up on a claim. She went in 1914 and she actually did successfully prove up, sold it in 1918. That is all I really know about her experience. She didn't talk much about it. Of course, she died when I was 10, so you don't really think of your great-grandmother as a person who had a childhood, so I never asked her questions about it. But when I learned about this about 5 years ago, I was fascinated. I didn't know, first of all, that there was much homesteading that went on in like the 1910s, 1915s. That led me to read a few books, which led me to read a few more books. In all, I think I read about 80 books on homesteading or eastern Montana. And I was just amazed at what all these individuals had to overcome in order to survive, basically, on a desert prairie. And I could just picture a 16-year-old girl, stubborn and foolish and wanting a place of her own very badly. And Hattie sprang to life. And I ended up writing her story. And I wasn't at all aware of what audience I was writing to because it's really important when you're writing to think about being true to the story. It wasn't until I took it to my critique group, which is a group we meet monthly of five other published authors. We read each other our manuscripts and offer helpful suggestions. Sometimes I take them eagerly. Sometimes I get all bent out of shape about them. But I always listen to my critique group. Well, I took it to my critique group, and one of my very dear mentors, Catherine Galbraith, said to me, well, you're writing a young adult novel. And it wasn't until that point that I realized, well, yes, I am, because the main character is 16. But it wasn't something I consciously set out to do. I was hooked by this story about the thought of a young girl striking out on her own. And that's what led me to 5 years of writing and research and led me to the
where I am today. Let me ask you about the research and this part of writing a book that's, I guess it's called historical fiction, mm-hmm. right? So did you then travel to this area where your grandmother homesteaded?
My great-grandmother.
I'm sorry.
Took three trips to eastern Montana, one by train. And I needed to see what it smelled like in different seasons, different. I had no idea when I was walking on the prairie grass that there were teeny tiny, like half inch tall prickly cactus in the grass, which I wouldn't have heard. They make a distinctive crunching sound. I wouldn't have realized that. One reason, you know, those kids when they went barefoot had really tough, you know, soles of their feet to walk across that. So I wouldn't have gotten those details if I hadn't gone there. That doesn't mean you can't write fiction or historical fiction without that kind of research. But for me, I needed to go and smell, hear the birds, because I didn't grow up in the country or on a prairie, and I really needed to know what that was like.
And did you find out what not just the geography and topography is like, but how about the life of World War I? Really, it's you know, 20th century, but barely, I suppose, in that rustic of an environment. How do you research that and say, well, they had no electricity, or they did, or they had outhouses, or they didn't? Where do you go, and how do you do that in a little? Is this town still there?
The town actually exists. It's just a dot on the road, Vida, Montana.
Vida, Montana.
Mm-hmm, Vida, Montana. There's no store or anything there anymore. It's really just a little dot on the road. But this kind of gets back to, you know, sometimes I feel like such an old lady saying, well, kids these days, things these days. But I am really sad about the fact that we rely on email so much for our communication, because what treasures I found in people's journals and their reminiscences, especially around the time of the country's bicentennial, a lot of folks decided to write down what their growing up was like. And there were wonderful little homemaker circles that put out mimeographed pamphlets, if you will, collections of memories of these farmers' wives, homesteaders' wives. And I was able to read them and find out, you know, how much did a, you know, pound of butter cost, or what, you know, what might they have eaten at a buck social. And without those treasures, I really don't know how I would have recreated Hattie's life.
And how do you find those things in a county library in a little place like that?
God bless our library system. We have something called the Interlibrary Loan, and you request a title that you've run across in a bibliography somewhere, and they do their darndest to get it to you. And in the cases when they couldn't, then that's when I went to the State Historical Library in Helena to read documents there. Some of them are so fragile and frail, they really can't be sent out to a person.
And as I read some of your book, is that where you got the, I don't know, colloquialisms and some of the old, the names sound old?
The names came from a lot of
different. Turn of a phrase, mm-hmm. you know, is 100 years old. Or did you make that stuff up?
Some of it I made up, Gary. Some of it, because I mean, I do write fiction, right? So some of it you make up because it just sounds right for the time. But some of it I read enough of how people talked that I really – and read newspapers. I read an entire year's collection of the 1918 Wolf Point Herald.
So you get a feel then for
exactly,
the time.
That's, exactly. Wow. Yeah.
I'd like to just interject a bookstore perspective on this. We've used the term young adult. And in our store, this would not be considered how we term young adult, because that's for 12-year-olds that could involve sex violence or language. Kirby's book, Hattie Big Sky, can be read by 9, 10, or 110-year-old readers. There is nothing in it that is inappropriate for any age in reading. The older the student, the more they'll get out of it because of the history that's involved. And it's not just classified as historical fiction. It's adventure. It is incredible strength. It's truly an everything that could be a good book.
Tony, thank you. That's high praise coming from you. Thank you very much.
Well, you know, it's getting its fair share of good reviews. It'll be a featured book in the coming months at both Borders Books as well as Barnes & Noble, right?
Yeah, I don't like to say that out loud in front of Sean.
I mean, she's probably featuring it in her store. If you like it, seem to like it so much, it must be on the shelf right up front.
I'm proudest of – I have 2 starred reviews, one from School Library Journal and one from Booklist. But I'm proudest of – and I mentioned this. I had a great book launch party at Shawnee's store on Sunday night, and I mentioned this then. Every day since the book has come out on September 26th, I have gotten an email from someone who has been touched by Hattie's story in some way. And that, to really connect with a reader, is the best, you know, any prize, any award, any whatever doesn't mean as much as a genuine expression of connection from our reader.
Mm-hmm. That must feel great.
It feels very great.
Well, Shawnee, now you had her at an appearance at your bookstore to sign books recently.
Yes.
Is that she looked like she's going to be a success with this book?
As far as our store is concerned, it's number one on the list.
How about that? Well, Kirby, now, in just writing in the first place, how did you decide, you know, you had kids already, you were a wife, and what inspired you? So I have a story to tell, or I want to just try something new, or
You mean in the very beginning,
yeah,
when I started writing? I will tell you the exact moment I decided to start writing books for children. When we were our children were small, my husband was starting his own business, so we didn't have much money. But I took the kids to the library every single week. I was one of those moms where we did not watch TV at home. I could talk for hours on that, but I really feel it's important for kids to be exposed to books. And so we would bring home arms full of books. And one of the books I brought home one day was Arnold Lobel's, Shawnee will know this book, Ming Lo Moves the Mountain. It's a charming picture book. And I remember reading it aloud to my children and turning the last page, and I felt something like a little switch going off inside me, literally. And I said to myself, I want to learn to write a book, a story that will touch other people the way this story has touched my children and me. And that was 20-some-odd years ago, and I began exploring that very week, trading babysitting with a girlfriend, and I would go to the Ballard Library and write for a couple hours every day. And I was, even though I was reading a lot, which I think is very important, I was writing a lot of really, really bad stories. Ones that if I came now and told Shawnee about them, you know, Sammy Squirrel and Billy Beaver, and I did everything wrong. But I had to write all the bad stuff so that I could get to the good stuff, so I could know what I was supposed to write.
Well, I guess that leads to tips for people who want to do this. Just write and write and try and show it around. But you have to show it to somebody to know it's bad, do you, or not? I mean, Shawnee, do people come and say, I got a great book I wrote. You should sell this in your store. And you say,
my first recommendation is that they call the organization to call, and that's SCBWI.
What's that?
The Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. They are a community of readers and writers. They do break into small groups so that they can help critique each other's work. They meet with editors. They are given advice from publishing houses. And it's really a clearinghouse for anyone interested in writing or illustrating children's books. We at the store have no control over the books until they come to us from publishers. So the best way to become a writer is to join the other writers and learn from them.
So there's a few networks out there for aspiring writers to find out the pathways and roads to take.
Exactly.
Is it a cutthroat industry?
No, it's not at all. It's a very supportive community, I think. Let me just follow up on what Shawnee said. The SCBWI meets the first Wednesday of every month on the Seattle Pacific University campus. And anyone is welcome to come to a meeting. I think there's a small fee if you're not a member. But it is a great place to learn. And it is a community where information is shared and encouragement is freely given. I wouldn't be able to make it without the encouragement and support of my fellow writers and fabulous booksellers like Shawnee.
But Gary, when you said that, is this a cutthroat industry? The industry, I would say, is cutthroat. The children's world is extremely cooperative and pleasant and helpful to each other.
We listened to Mr. Rogers when he told us to cooperate, didn't we? We still carry that around with us.
Well, because, you know, the big stores, the people who push books into there, the publishers, they have fight for shelf space, right, against their competitors or their own authors, I suppose. Oh, this guy's not going to sell. Let's put this book that we are also selling in its place. I mean,
in independent bookstores, we know what's on the shelf, but better than that, we know what's in the books. So we can share our knowledge with anyone who walks in wanting a good recommendation.
And another thing, as we were still talking about the writing of books, is people, I think, I see famous people writing children's books. People probably think it's easy to write a children's book because I was a kid. Everybody seems to have their own perspective. Oh, I was a kid. I can write a children's book. And your current book, Hattie Big Sky, is written in the first person. Is it easy to write a children's book because you were a child? Everyone was a child. So,
no, I will tell you, people often think picture books are the easiest to write. And the picture book that I do have out, The Magic Kerchief, took me 10 years to write, and it's fewer than 1,400 words. Now, I will say there are some celebrity writers who do understand what a children's book is all about. Shawnee probably has her own ideas, but I'm thinking of Jamie Lee Curtis. I think she actually does understand what a children's book is about. I'm not going to name any of the others.
No,
but
that's fine.
Some
that's fine.
Do
but
not get
John
it.
John Lithgow has done a good job with
I don't know
as
his
well.
Book. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, we are going to run out of time pretty soon. I want to make sure we say people can find out more about Hattie Big Sky at HattieBigSky.com.
Mm-hmm.
You have your own website, KirbyLarson.com. Larson spelled with an O-N.
O-N. And I also have a blog attached to that, which offers weekly writing tips and inspiration for writers.
And Shawnee, your bookstore near the University Village in Seattle, AllForKidsBooks.com. You have your own website, right?
That's
AllForKidsBooks.com. And what's the street address?
2900 Northeast Blakely. And we not only had a wonderful author event with Kirby, but we do many author events throughout the year. And people can be on our email list to receive that information.
So there's a lot that people should be finding out more about kids' books than just picking up the latest SpongeBob SquarePants or Captain Underpants book.
And just quickly squeeze in, the reason we're talking today is that we are celebrating National Children's Book Week. So I'd challenge whoever is out there listening to pick up a children's book, go to an independent bookstore like Shawnee's, get a recommendation, and I'm going to bet you that you will enjoy every single word that you read.
We have been talking today with Kirby Larson, author of Hattie Big Sky, and Shawnee Haslett, the owner of the All for Kids Books and Music Store north of University Village. Thank you for coming in today so much.
Thank you.
You've given
Thank
us inspiration
you,
to pick up a book. Kirby, good luck on the success of Hattie Big Sky. Thank you so much for coming. I'm Gary Shipe. Thanks for listening today. We hope you've learned something new. Join us again next week as we continue to talk with people that are making a difference in our community.